space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon.
And we're here this week to talk about the what would have been the mid-season premiere of season two of Star Trek Prodigy, but isn't for reasons. But it totally is a premiere episode, the way it's put together and what it does and everything. This is a big episode. It's not
it's such a good one because, like, it does work completely. If you continue on, the signs are there, but, like, it wouldn't be particularly out of place just continuing on as the next episode. You'd think, oh, my God, that was a rather huge episode, and now they've kind of sort of gone for something different. But I think it kind of works as a whole as well as being... It would have worked so well as a breakpoint as well.
I think so.
So I'm just going to blow Prodigy every chance I get.
Oh, yeah.
And I really got a feeling of this, because I'm just going to say this generally before we get into it. I really particularly got a feeling this week of something which I kind of put hammer on the nail with it. Like, mm-hmm. It's that there is a thing with the Prodigy crew, whereas I always feel like you'd be accepted by the other crews. Like, you feel like they're your guys, you know, and when they... But up against Chakotay, you're like, no, go on, you can show him, you can show Chakotay, you can show him your stuff, like, you can do it, you know, it's like, it's your buddies somehow. If, like, I particularly get that feeling from these more so than other Trek somehow.
Yeah, I agree, and I will personally side with anyone if they're going up against Chakotay, so I am absolutely fine with that.
I think Chakotay's in the right, but I'm still going to side with you.
Now, before we get into these two episodes... I have a fun little game tonight for you. And anyone watching are welcome to join in as well. And I think we can agree that Dal doesn't have the best two episodes. He makes quite a lot of mistakes, does things wrong.
Okay.
It doesn't shine in this episode.
It's a teachable one for him.
But can you spot his worst mistake he makes during the two episodes?
Oh, God, right. I know exactly what it's going to be. Do you want to go first, Jim?
Well, I think I might have it down in my notes later on, so we'll get to it.
We're quite happy to do it in chronological order.
It's one we're playing as we go through the episode.
Yeah, so, you know, is this the worst?
I like you're wrong.
Yeah, you're right.
Add the tension into the episode. It's like a
minute. Yeah, exactly. It's, what do they call it? A bait and hook or something. So yeah, we're talking about the last flight of the Protostar, which is a bit of a misleading episode title because the this is the most we've seen the Protostar do all season, so it's definitely not the last flight.
It's almost like it's talking about what happened to it before that it had its last flight and crash.
Yeah. And it's also...
This is called the resurrection of the Protostar.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Ellie. I didn't think of that one. I was just thinking, it's like, again, I'm being really careful because we're trying to cover these without giving any forelock.
Too much spoilers,
It feels like they're almost alluding to something like maybe this is the beginning of the last flight. Because we know in some way they've got to write the circle of, like, having... them discover it in the past.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've got to do something. So I don't think it's totally spoiled. It's like, even at this stage, when you're watching it, you know that's probably where it's going towards.
They can't keep this version of the Protostar.
No.
Well, they can. It's like the trolley problem. It's they can keep this version of the Protostar, but it'll destroy the entire universe. Or do you let this version of the Protostar go and save the entire universe? You know, it's...
Yeah. Tomato, you know, really, same difference.
We pick up where we left off with Chakotay on, well, the planet, but he's on the Protostar, and basically we get this montage where it's Castaway, the Tom Hanks film, though he hasn't got a Wilson volleyball.
Yeah, still he's got chess pieces made of his first officer.
Yeah.
Well, you can tell there's a time going on because you see that he's getting through, he's catching the fish, he's getting through, he's catching the fish. He's carving chess pieces and all he's got is a little whittling knife.
Yeah.
So that's going to take time and he carves an entire chess set. So you've got, 32 pieces he's hand carved there. So you can tell that there's a period of time going because it sort of shows between a meal that he doesn't...
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a montage to show the passage of time and show that he's been there a while and everything.
And it's just monotonous and he's just doing the same thing over and over. He's not doing anything else.
We've got to transform him from the avuncular Captain Jacote we've seen at the beginning of the series saying goodbye and being flirty with... Admiral Janeway to the cowboy moody Jacote we see. It's like the 5 o'clock shadow Jacote. Rugged Jacote is born.
Yeah. This is serious character development for Chakotay here.
I quite like Rugged Chakotay.
I quite like Rugged Chakotay as well. But anyway,
I mean, I must admit, is acting like there's a weird pause he does in one of his acting choices at the beginning. He goes, "What? You were on my ship?" Like, there's something weird like
that. There's a couple of good ones that I've noticed. And some... We'll get to it, but there's some interesting pronunciation of some things in this episode. But again, we'll get there.
More interesting, I will say, than... Like, I
yeah, definitely.
I'm as problem as bothered by Jacote as you guys, but... I do see this as a much better version.
The most I've ever liked Chakotay.
So a little bit then.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, a tiny amount.
He's all right. He's all right in this one. But the crew get caught in a net, and that's how Chakotay is introduced to them. And he realizes that, wait a minute, these are those guys from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But
and they don't really... aged.
And then not what they said they were.
Apart from Zero, he won't recognize Zero.
Yeah, Zero's very different. Yeah, that's
true. And is it
Michelle wasn't there.
Michelle, she wasn't there, was she? She
was not. No, she wasn't there in the first bit. So yeah, a little bit different, but he recognizes the majority of them.
I also found that it was very quickly, it's like... you look exactly the same you did like ages ago. Ah, well, I don't believe your time travel, though. It was like very quickly brushed. That seemed weird to me, how quickly they went past that. And he just seemed to not believe them, basically. But it's like, surely that's the only thing you've got there.
I think he's been distracted a little bit because we soon find out that Hologram Janeway's there. So Chakotay's been on his own with Hologram Janeway for 10 years. Just saying,
but it turns out in the
and I bet she got off with the monkey again.
I was gonna say with the plasma as well as having the whales in there, they also had some sea monkeys, so he was really lost then.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna suggest anything, but knowing what we know of Chakotay, maybe. So there is good, I think they do put good rationale to why he's here and everything. Like, he explains that they know about the weapon and that's why he's decided, I'm just going to watch over this ship forever. I'm not going to and get it out.
I'm just going to take it out of the equation so it can't happen.
Yeah, he could have just self-destructed it, I suppose. You know, maybe he's waiting to do that till he thinks he's going to die or something.
If he's ejected all the warp core and everything, could he self-destruct it still?
Oh, good point. Yeah, there's no antimatter, is there, at this point? Like, and that's how they trigger the...
Like, surely it would have made more sense for the crew to have used escape pods, got away from the ship, the escape pods making... Or even some shuttles and got away from the ship. Because it can bring its own shuttles, get away from the ship and set it to self-destruct instead of marooning yourself on the planet.
I think it was just probably the thing of, like, just that's his best chance for survival. There was nowhere he could get to, maybe in a shuttle. Like, it just, I just, it was a self-preservation move. Like, essentially, if it's got no power, no way of getting off the thing.
But we do know that, I can't remember the name of the planet that...
Be used again.
I can't remember the name of the planet that Gwen's from.
Transalara.
Transalara. But we have established already that Transalara is in a travel distance from Earth in a runabout.
Yeah.
Because that's how Gwen went. So there's no reason that they couldn't print something like that on the protostar to escape him.
I mean, my worry would be that Transaloria sounds a lot like Translore, where the doctor goes to die. Maybe he was just worried about
that. Maybe, yeah. I don't want to. That's Chakotay. Like, I don't want to go. But speaking of Chakotay again, so he decides, I'm going to lock the crew out. And Hologram Janeway's like, no, let them in. Now, on the face of it, that's Hologram Janeway's just been nicer. Chakotay's in this grump. But is it maybe that Hologram Janeway effectively has been Chakotay's prisoner for 10 years? And she's like, no, you must let other people in. I've had enough, Chakotay.
Yeah. He overrode. He overrode the end program, like command for her.
Yeah.
And please let my suffering end.
I'm just making some changes, Janeway. Don't worry. Yeah. So then you get, you know what this reminded me of, weirdly? It really reminded me of, do you remember Ewok's Battle for Endor? When you've got...
I try not to.
It's a great film. It's by far not the worst Star Wars film. And you've got like Wilford Brimley and Wicket and Sindel go there, and he's like, no, don't let him in here. And Teek, that little sort of rabbit type geezer, is the one that wants to let him in. And this just totally reminded me of that, except Chakotay's Wilford Brimley and Janeway is a little rabbit thing.
Now, I could understand him at first, not letting him in. You're not coming on my ship. And and they're just outside and there's nothing going on. But then the lightning, iron storm, whatever it is, that he already knows how dangerous they are, starts. And he's going, nah, leave him out there.
You know, my feeling
on
that, though,
they've got a tent.
My feeling on that, though, is twofold. One, if they'd introduced it, actually might have been interesting if he thought it was hallucinating at the beginning, so he didn't think they were real. I think that would have been, would have made sense of a lot of the beats of this story a bit more.
Yeah. But
for me, just at that moment, I think it does still work, but for me, it just sells the fact that he's just so broken. He's kind of lost his way, even as a Starfleet officer.
Yeah, that's it.
Moral code. It's like, oh, that guy, like my bird friend, who I'm going to forget the name of, died, bird person died basically in Rick and
Morty. Maybe it's a Native American thing.
Yeah, I think he just decided that it's like his crew died, like his first officer died, so it's like he's just lost his faith in anything. And actually that does build into when the protostar crew or Voyager crew or whatever crew, when they start like reminding him, like, it's like, look, we're working as a team. Remember how good this is. So it kind of does work thematically, kind of
thing. Yeah, I think it's almost like he knows, because, you know, he's a good guy at the end of the day, and it's almost like, no, I've been happy just in my isolation here.
Just then they, where no monkeys put in.
Exactly.
And
then they turn up, and he
out of this.
He probably senses this is going to lead to something. This is probably going to lead to me having to be a captain again and putting myself into action again. And I think at this point, he's just not ready to lapse back into it. Like, he's got quite comfortable with very little responsibility and everything. And it's like, no, I know that if I let him in, they'll get me and I'll be back.
Like,
and I'll...
They did miss a trick here, because he obviously has just been slumming it. He's been getting his crew, getting his fish and sat there carving chests and not doing a great deal else. Now, because he's got the beard, they could have really gone through for, was it the last one? I'll try to forget its name. Blood and Thunder.
Oh, Love and Thunder, yeah.
They could have gone for Love and Thunder forelock to him and really put some weight on him, because he's just been sat around slumming it for 10 years.
Oh, they could have done, yeah. Could have gone for Dad Bod Chakotay.
I mean, I did for me, I also wonder, like, just to go into your theory, Jim, because I like the idea that it's like, oh no, I'm done with this, and like as soon as I engage with them, I'm back in the game. Yeah. I wonder if also he kind of like, if he'd been on his own, if he would have maybe reacted straight away. Maybe the fact that he knew Janeway would tell him off, like maybe not even consciously, but subconsciously, he knew that she wouldn't let him let them die.
Maybe, and then yeah. Kind
of gave him a bit of license. Maybe there was a bit of self-head games going on there.
Well, we can only imagine that, like, Janeway has played a similar role with him in this as she did with the crew. You know, she's the conscience. She's the voice of reason.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's probably, to some extent, whether consciously or not, he's probably deferring to Janeway to some degree for making his decisions.
It reminds me of the episode of Friends where it's like, I forget who it is. Is it Monica that Ross is just bitching to? And like, she basically eventually says, it's like, look, oh no, it's his ex-wife. It's like, look, you know, you're a good person. You know, you're not going to be a prick and let your friends just be there at the side.
Yeah.
You've had no argument with Rachel. You know, you're going to do it in the end. So just get off your ass and do it.
I think maybe
there's a bit of that. It's like, he knows he's going to do it eventually.
Yeah. He needs someone to just, he's letting himself have a little moment, pretending he's going to lock him out for the night
and die.
But yeah, there's definitely some denial in that.
But sadly, his time alone with Janeway is going to be over. So,
just Dal's reaction is just brilliant as well. It's like everyone's already gone in, basically, is going, oh, you think we're so easily going to give in, do you? Oh, where's everyone gone?
Yeah. And I like the bit where, you know, they say, now we need to fix a captain.
Oh, what a
stretch. Well, he's still a dick to them, isn't he, when they come on and they say, well, you know the shit so well, go find your own place, drag out.
Yeah.
They even did the way they did it, and the way they kind of like, the montage they did basically of him de-grumpifying was nicely done.
Yeah.
Like, just everything, he just got a little less pissy, and it's like, okay, I'm a little bit impressed, but I'm not going to give it to you. The next one he's going, it's like, he's waving to them or giving a live long and
prosper. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the approach they take to it, which when it starts out, it's just like, we're just going to be really nice to him. It's just like, morning, Captain. How are you doing, Captain? And at first, he's just like, oh, fuck off. But
could you give me something to be a prick to? Like, you're not helping me at all here.
Because they are, like we've talked about, such likable characters, like, of course they get through to him and they melt his heart, so to speak. But yeah, I do enjoy the comedy of Grumpy Chakotay having to put up with them just being obsequious to him. Yeah.
It is fun.
And then, yeah, this is where... Is this the first part of the game then, Elliot? Because Dal has to go and get some stuff, but there's the storm. And, yeah, this is where they kind of have to go and rescue Dal, really.
Yeah, but this isn't the worst mistake he made.
No, I don't think it's the worst mistake.
No, I think I very much know which. I'm going to enjoy bringing up every single moment where we could say it is, but we all
also did mention another mistake where he was off to stay in the tent that blew away when the rest of the crew were quite happy to go straight.
Sorry,
Elliot,
apologize.
Was that the moment?
Yeah.
No, that wasn't the moment.
Oh, was it not? Was it not? You surprised me. I can't imagine where you're going with this.
Well, we'll find out, won't we?
Yeah, we will. We will. It's a mystery. It's a mystery.
Okay, so there's lightning snakes, which I think is a first for Star Trek, but I'm always up for lightning snakes.
Are they more like eels? I thought they're more like a bit like.
Go on, we'll call them lightning eels then. Don't sound quite as cool as lightning snakes.
What's them really vicious eels that kill anything?
Oh, I don't know. Jelly deal?
No, that's how
they kill your taste buds.
What bloody southerners eat?
I'm gonna say it depends who you buy them off.
If you get them from
a dodgy stall, they might kill you.
Yeah, they'll kill your taste buds. Like I said,
I can't remember the name of.
But don't they call them plasma or something or other? Plasma,
maybe.
You
know what? We'll come like that.
So I thought it was really cool for the idea of living plasma. I like it when they take something and put it in a different context, so you don't get plasma in living form usually.
Yeah.
And where Star Trek's all about so many life forms being like anything can produce a life form, it just it's a different.
You know what? They're probably called plasma eels, which just makes me look like a right dickhead for writing down lightning snakes. So
it's
absolutely fine.
But isn't this the bit where is this the bit where Chakotay says to Tim, it's like someone who likes to go fast.
Oh, yeah. Like,
yeah, you're very slow.
That was nice. That
yeah,
was,
like, very good.
To it. That was good, yeah.
But how does Chakotay know his catchphrase?
No, you know what? I will defend Chakotay here because...
Go on.
Dull would go, it's like, and by the way, while I'm captain of the ship, I'm there going, go fast, you know? He would be bragging about everything.
Yeah, okay. I'll go with that.
You know, I think it's quite reasonable to assume that Dal has mentioned that he likes to go fast.
Yeah, I would think
everyone else has said to him, like, right, we are trying to convince him we're a serious operation, just stick to the mission, just show him how good we are, just be, hey, captain, you know, just do that all the time. And he's going, right, no problem. Hey, do you know what I did when I was captain? It's like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, know that's what's happened. He is an ADHD kid, I'm telling you.
Ixnay on the apting care. But then we get a Matrix hovercraft chase.
I'm glad I wasn't the only one who thought that it was Matrix.
Oh, no, it's
an episode of Matrix.
It is totally the Matrix. I mean, it's better than any Matrix apart from the first Matrix, so we'll give it that, but I mean, it is completely the hovercraft from the Matrix.
Well, now, I did like when... before we get there, where Jankum's trying to fix it, and Chakotay's going, it hasn't run for years, you'll never fix that.
Oh, he's going,
watch.
Yeah, Jankum Pog, how good is he? Just like, he is the Mon Scotty. He is. I don't say that lightly. Scotty O'Brien and now Jankum Pog.
It reminds me a lot of O'Brien, because O'Brien had the thing where he just hit things and things.
Yes, true. Work.
Well, let's face it, like Miles Eber O'Brien was the basically the spiritual son of Scotty, and now you've got the grandson in Jankum Pog. Like, no disrespect to the other engineers, but they just don't touch that triumvirate.
No. And I agree. Percussive maintenance is the way to go.
He even calls it that, doesn't he? Percussive maintenance.
Yeah.
And it's it.
And Scotty was all about the bodge job. Like, that's the thing. The other ones are all too kind of put together in the way they do it. Like, Stamets is an amazing... I know he's not technically the engineer. He's a spore drive, but he's effectively the engineer. Yeah. And he is so put together in the way he does things. He knows, proper systems for everything. He is a scientist through and through his engineering. Whereas the three which we're talking about here, they're just like, I can jerry-rig this to be better than anything you've ever seen.
Yeah, hit it with a hammer. I reckon Reno's got a bit of that in her as well.
Yeah, Reno, She could join the club. She could.
I'm not sure about Trip. Geordi, definitely not. Geordi was trying to book. Even Scotty told him that he was too much by the book.
I mean, Geordi...
With Trip, I was just going to say, he was the one who wrote the book, so he can't be outside the book.
Yeah.
Writing it, you know what I mean?
Geordi pretty much, let's be honest, Geordi got the job of chief engineer because they'd gone through that many in season one. They were like, look, we just need someone to go permanently. Geordi's been around long enough. He's a nice chap. Just let him do it. Yeah. It's fine.
B'Elanna could botch things together.
Yeah, look. Yeah,
she fought outside the box a bit.
I would say so, but it's more out of necessity. I don't think there was no natural oeuvre.
I think hers was more to be rebellious, to actually go against the rules.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and she was never like, she even said in one episode, she goes like, no, I don't do that. I don't exaggerate my timescales to make myself look good. The other three of them, you know, totally would. Like, even Jacob would do a bit of that. And you know, just so he got 5 minutes fucking peace, O'Brien would do that on DS9. Because otherwise, he gets no breaks unless he goes, oh, no, let's take half an hour. Right, you're coming down Quarks, Julian. That's, you know, that
O'Brien to be fair, O'Brien was in the best position to do that. So he could have told them anything.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it'll take 6 years, will that? And they wouldn't have known any different.
Sorry. Like, do you want to check with the other person who knows Bajoran, Kardashian, and Federation system? Sorry, do you want to check on the other expert?
Exactly. Oh, so another expert. He can mash them together in his head. He just sort of goes, yeah, I'll make that work.
Let's face it, unless they asked Ron, which they weren't going to do, he's the only one who knew as much as O'Brien, but
well,
he didn't
yeah,
know as much as he knew earlier on.
If anything, Rom ruined O'Brien's con that he had going for years. As soon as Rom got on the case, it was, oh, no, I'm going to have to work.
Shit, so
anyway.
Rom, shut up saying you can do it in 5 minutes. 15 at very fucking least.
Yeah. So, Dal finds the dead bird guy. And this is sort of Chakotay's moment where he's like, oh, no, dead bird guy. And you'd found the antimatter as well. I should have believed you,
right.
Dead bird guy.
I love that he's just dead bird guy to us.
Yeah, he should have listened to dead bird guy, should Chakotay, but he didn't.
Certain people who go above and beyond their original names. Well, yeah. Saw the daddy bear, dead bird guy.
I was yeah. starting to think, like, let's not forget, this is still a kid's show.
Yeah.
And it's quite that the show, the skeleton of him, and it's clearly
yeah, it is actually.
I was quite surprised that the show showed that.
Mind, I don't want to be one of them old men who just goes, well, in my day. But if you'd ever seen Mysterious Cities of Gold, there's an episode where they get shipwrecked on the Galapagos Islands. And most of the episode is them making seesaws so they can flip the turtles open over so they can eat them. And you watch it and you're like, they wouldn't do that now. Like, it's just brutal.
You don't even have to go back that far. I don't know if you know the podcast, How Did This Get Made? Which actually stars Jenk and Pog, also known as Jason Manzoukas.
Yeah.
But they did an episode recently on Thunderpants, which, like,
oh, 2000, yeah.
I want to say, got Rupert Grint in it. And in that, they literally, I haven't watched this since it came out. I think I saw it on TV. But they talk about the fact there's a scene where he's on a call to NASA on live TV and they tell him that he's going to die on this mission. And it's like, the guy's like, you would not do that in a movie now. Like, that was not going to happen now. It's like, and it's just so normalized that they're doing this on a live call broadcast to the world.
But yeah, I agree. It's a very sort of sobering scene and you don't necessarily expect it
modern's kids show, because like we grew up with like, well, I grew up with 70s and 80s kids show.
Yeah,
yeah. We grew up with 80s and 90s. But like some of the stuff we used to have, I can't remember its name. There was a show on in the early 80s, and it was set sort of as if they'd been in a dystopian future, sort of to mid 80s. And you had gangs roving around beating people up and all sorts. It was proper going on to fascist sort of things. And this was a kid's show put out at 4 in the afternoon. Purely as a kid's drama.
Yeah, I mean, I got to interview the wonderful Hugo Meyer, who was the dungeon keeper in Nightmare. And like that show was all about, throughout the course of 5 series, I think it was about one a series who actually made it and completed the course. They would never do that now. It's all about like, you can win and everything. And it's like, they'd have to at least win 50-50. Yeah.
And to be fair, Nightmare, it was only in the later series and they only started letting them win when it was coming to the end of the season. Like, they'd always make sure they wrapped up whoever the last adventurer was really quickly so they could win it. But so it was more out of necessity than anything else. But yeah, all the people used to die. Like, they'd have these kids come in and they'd go, right, walk forward. And then a big, like, machete had just cut their head off. And they'd go, right, you're dead. Right, you're away dead. You go, kids.
I think he said,
next.
I think it was Longhorn. He said it's like there was, if you got a team who were doing really well, but they were being dicks about it. So basically, if you got these kind of really snotty kids who are like, it's like, oh, I think we've got it. Thank you. Like, just ignoring him, treating him like crap, talking like crap to their goons. Like, no, you don't do that. You know, all that crap. They'd go like, they'd say Longhorn in his earpiece or some word like this. and it would mean they would go into the room with the blades going across and they'd get them at double speeds just to fuck them over. Like, when does that happen with kid shows now? Like, and you loved it for it because the excitement was, it's like, no one ever completes it. So when someone did complete it,
I remember the first time I saw someone do it. It was incredible.
A lot of the things back then, it wasn't about the prices for TV. Because, like, to be fair, a lot of the prices on TV back then were absolute garbage. Anyway, you didn't win great prizes.
You didn't win out on that.
No, but even shows that you did win prizes, you didn't win a lot as a prize. The thing was, it was to be on the show was what was the big thing.
Yeah.
To go up, not to win something. It was to be like, you've also gone to a time when we only had two or three channels.
That's true.
So you'd be on TV and tens of millions of people would see you. And that was your prize, that everyone knew that you'd been on TV. You're a hero in the schoolyard. You've been on TV.
And completely. And it was like, it was the journey, I think. And as viewers, we enjoyed the journey, not the destination.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Nightmare was all about, like, cool, what weird and wonderful CGI magical world are we in?
Yeah, Nightmare was awesome.
The graphics
awesome.
Now would be derisible. But for the
anyone
80s,
who's...
they were so good. We'd never seen anything like that. And to make a whole show with green screen, that was never done.
Anyone who's watching or listening, if you've not seen Nightmare, it's Nightmare with a K, and you can find most of it on YouTube. Kids TV show from the 80s, 90s. Brilliant. Anyway, back to Prodigy. So we're wrapping up episode one then. So they decide, now we've got the antimatter, we can make a go of it.
Oh, sorry. Can I just check? Was the moment, and I just want to make sure, because I think this is probably it. Was it the moment that Dahl brought back the corpse of Dead Bird Guy? Was that the moment where he made the mistake because he shouldn't have risked his life like that?
No.
No, I didn't think
that. You struck me to my very core.
That wasn't his biggest mistake. Like, let's be fair, he makes a lot of mistakes in these two episodes.
He does.
There's one really massive, major, big one.
I'm just shocked that that wasn't it. I was predicting that.
And we're halfway through, and we've not had it yet, so it's all to play for.
Continue.
I like the way the episode finishes, so it's before it can fly, it has to sail. And if your reaction to that is not cool, then you're not a fan, I'm sorry. I don't like to gatekeep, but...
No, that seems fair.
I am going to say there's a lot of space magic takes part here.
There is. So part two then, we go back to Voyager, and Voyager's under attack by the Langoliers. And we get a really, really good Admiral's log. Like, it doesn't feel totally out of place, but it brings you completely up to speed on everything that's been going on. It summarizes basically the story so far of the whole season, never mind just the episode. But yeah, I just think it's great. And you know, we talked about this in the early days of Discovery and Picard, like, why weren't they doing Captain's Logs? Because it's a great storytelling device.
If you think about it, if this had a mid-season finale, the last episode of being the mid-season finale, this had been episode 11, so you'd have had this as a two-parter.
Yeah, you would.
Separation. So this Captain's Log is really clever for recapping what happened in the previous 10 episodes in a really quick and concise way.
Yeah, exactly, which is why they're great and they should use them.
Yeah.
And again, like, Janeway is like cerebral. I love this characterization of Janeway, that she's grown beyond the rules of just being a captain, just being a Starfleet officer. She can see past her. Mm. Like, she still sticks so close to those morals, but she lives by the morals, not by the rules. And it's lovely. And this is a great example. Like, she knows she's so concerned for these young people, But she also knows she did the right thing by trusting them. But she wants to check they're in safe hands by checking Wesley Crusher, who she doesn't know from Earth.
Yeah.
Like, she might have seen a file on him once, but that's about it. So she wants to make sure they're in the good hands. I think such great characterization for her.
As far as the Federation's concerned, he's not been seen since Troy and Riker's wedding.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And just before that, before he ascended, he was being a dick.
Well, that's it. He disappeared. He shows up at a wedding after years. No one knew where he'd been. And then he vanishes again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he wasn't even named in the wedding. So, you know, God knows if that was even him.
As we said at the time, though, like, I bet Will Wheaton was pissed at the time that they cut his speaking role. But I bet he's so glad they did now. Because if they'd have left that scene in, he couldn't have been Traveller Wesley, and it's so much better that he is.
And even though he should have got some speaking role in that, really, like just by his druthers, there was something kind of, I always found it kind of really wonderful in a weird way that he's just there and you can sort of write your own sort of fan fiction of why he's there. It gives the fans more than just one line that he would probably have got otherwise.
Well, now because we know he's a Traveller and all that, we can just surmise that Riker was his mentor.
Yeah, he came back for the wedding.
Mentor. And he just came back for the wedding because it was a big moment in his mentor's life. He made an exception to his normal rules.
Do you know what you could have done while you're at the wedding, Wesley? You could have said something along the lines of, like, you know, just be careful if there's a big tachyon radiation weapon. Yeah, Data, maybe take two of them emergency transporters. Well,
to be fair, I don't think he really liked Data, so because Data was always trying to upstage him, because he always knew that he was a smart kid on the Enterprise who solved the problems, and then he had this bloody upstart android always trying to sort of one up him. Oh, well, I can fix it instead.
True.
He could have also been, it's like, you know, when you're taking B4, like, who you'll meet in a minute, you know, when you meet him and you're taking him apart, maybe just steal a few parts, you might need them later. Just saying.
Yeah.
It's your kids, Marty. It's your kids.
I reckon, you know, it's probably that he looked a bit further and went, oh, okay, Data dies, but he comes back, then he dies again. Then he comes back again. So it's fine. It's fine. In 20 years, it'll be fine.
It'll be a big payoff, but it'll be worth it. I mean, it's also the fact that I think the original dialogue was meant to be, it's something along the lines of, like, oh yeah, I traveled as a traveler for a bit, but now I'm working on this starship. But was weird.
Gone back to being a lieutenant.
Yeah, I got bored of having the whole universe as something which I was helping keep together. I thought lieutenant would be better.
Much better. Anyway, so Janeway calls up Beverly, and that I really like how they do this scene. Like, Janeway says, oh, how's Jean-Luc? And there's just this little hint from Beverly that, no, well, he's pissed off and he's doing that Romulan thing. Like, she says, I'm told that's his priority. And for me, that kind of fills in, like, okay, so they obviously got together just after Nemesis, and now they've become estranged because Picard's so caught up with the whole Romulan thing, and that's obviously where the relationship kind of deteriorated.
Well, Picard, with their relationship, obviously put duty before them.
Yeah.
It's not like he couldn't give up anything with Starfleet. He could not give the slightest inch. He was so wrapped up in being a Starfleet officer, couldn't give up a tiniest little bit for the love of his life, and he just ruined it because of it.
Until Starfleet minorly disagree with him, then he's out for years, like, which makes no sense to the character, but anyway.
Well, I wonder if it sort of makes you wonder when you think about him and Beverly splitting up because of it, how he was with duty, if it was sort of like, that's after that when Starfleet, we went against him. We went, I've given up everything for you, and this is how you treat me.
I like that.
Sod it, I'm walking away.
Yeah,
I don't believe for one solid second that they thought about that at the time. But I
know, but that, yeah, that's it's nice. Like,
oh, that's
I give up everything for Starfleet, and you betrayed.
I lost Beverly because you were telling me to evacuate Romulus, and now you're saying we can't. Like,
Thank you for thinking about that much more than the first three series of Picard.
There we go.
I just want to quickly say on that note, it's like I thought having it's a minor thing, but having Beverly with a short haircut as well as something a little different just says that, like, when you're on the run, you don't want to worry about your hair. Seems like a very practical decision. And also having the what was I going to say? Something else about Beverly. That was the fact they could track her down at this point, whereas she's just gone underground. But
that's what I was going to say.
It fits nicely.
Yeah, there's a hint that she's already sort of laying low, so she's a bit difficult to get hold of. Okay, so this is a bit where I actually feel bad for Robert Beltran with this bit, because when he explains how they're going to repower the ship, it's some of the worst technobabble we've had in Star Trek in years. Like, he has to deliver this line about the matter and the antimatter and the storms and the thing. And you can hear him struggling with it. And for once, I'm not going to have a go at him, because that is some of the worst technobabble they've ever given anybody. And, you know, just to get through it, well done.
I agree totally, but I would just add to that. I think the only reason why you sort of get through it a little easier is that it is just after that moment where he's made the turn to being a captain again, and he cares.
Yeah.
So, like, the fact that he gets to set up with such enthusiasm because he's kind of, like, back in the game again, it just makes it work enough. Like, you're totally right. It is an insane amount of technobabble. It's really incoherent. But I think they put it in the right moment to be able to get away with it just about.
Yeah. And you can see the change in Chakotay. So he's kind of throwing his weight around a bit now. He's like, he's back in the, I'm the captain.
I'm the captain. You're cadets. I'm going to protect you and I'm going to give the orders for us to get through this.
Yeah.
Yeah, he shot the other captain and goes, I am the captain now.
Yeah. And yeah, so this is when they start sailing the ship, and it looks awesome.
But like it's like the entire explanation of this, someone will have to explain to me how we've just put the sail on this huge lump of metal. It's flying in the clouds.
Because of the tech, you didn't listen when Chakotay explained it to you.
And Elliot, if there was anyone who would know how this works, I would think it would be you. Say it.
It's space magic.
Thank you. You understand.
So Dal, is this his big mistake, Elliot, when he gets put on rope duty?
Yeah, it's a rope duty.
No.
It's not rope duty? Oh, wow.
It's another mistake, but it isn't his big mistake.
It's shocking that, isn't it? Again, can't imagine what it will be.
And this is around, I do quite...
Such a long con of a joke. It's just, everyone knows where you're going with this.
Nobody knows.
No, no one knows. No one knows. Sorry, of course.
And then
no one's put it in chat yet, so obviously no one does know.
Exactly. Then Dal and Chakotay have this really nice, like, heart-to-heart. I really like this scene where Dal is sort of saying, well, if I can't be a captain, what can I be? And Chakotay, it's like, you know, no, it's not about that. It's about being the best you can be in wherever you are at the time. And sometimes I really, really like that. And the only bit that lets it down, and this isn't just me having a pop at Chakotay for the sake of it, because, you know, if I were doing that, I'd just do it. But I think this is a legit possible issue with the writing, is they very easily brush over the Maquis here. Like, he goes, oh, well, you know, I started to rebel with a group called the Maquis, but I only really felt at home. And it's like, well, hang on. First of all, you weren't rebelling with the Maquis. They were actually fighting because they'd had the homes taken from them. You know, it wasn't
a
bunch of upstarts having a rebellion.
Yeah,
the Maquis had a very good cause, and the people believed in it.
The Maquis had a very justified cause, and the Federation let all them Federation citizens down, and that's why you got the Maquis.
I would say I enjoy the complexity of that, because I think they've got a really good point, the Maquis, but also at the same time, like, it made me think a lot when I originally watched it, of the Troubles in Ireland. To end those, they had to agree that people on both sides who had done abhorrent things, like both sides, abhorrent things, really unforgivable, but you had to forgive on both sides to have any chance of moving forward.
Yeah.
And that's what the Federation had said. It was an impossible decision. And people were rightly angry, like, as they were during the Troubles. But, like, for me, to get back to your point, Jim, it was the fact that, he's playing a Native American. And they baked into the story of the Marquee, the Native American arc. They told it through the Marquee, but they had storylines where they showed Native Americans being resettled to kick off the Marquee storyline.
And
so, but like you say, for him to so easily brush it off and rebel for a bit, just because we were getting moved off our historic lands, as we have been as a people since year dot. But apart from that, it was just a bit of monkey shines.
And Chakotay was a commander in Starfleet, and he gave that up to join the Maquis. You know, it wasn't just a bit of teenage rebellion, which is how it comes across here.
Yeah, it wasn't like he was an ensign or a first lieutenant or whatever, or a lieutenant just started out. He'd made up the ranks to being a commander when he decided, I believe in this cause. Starfleet is wrong.
I just thought it didn't do justice to the actual background of the Maquis, but then neither did Voyager as a whole. So.
No, it didn't. So it's consistent.
But still, the line, like you say, the line where he goes to him, that, you know, when you don't know where to be, just be where you're needed. Like, that's so
specific. Yeah.
Like you say, the setup doesn't work really if you think about it for a second, but I really was welling up, like, now you said that.
It's a great scene. That's
very differently, but it's just, it's such a lovely line.
No, he's really good. He's really good in here, how he talks to him. But
he is.
It's the fact that of how he brushes over his involvement with the Maquis.
Yeah, it's just a bit sloppy firm. We expect better from the writing of Prodigy, to be honest.
And can I ask, is this the point where Dahl makes his biggest mistake and goes with the advice of Chakotay? Is that where we're going with this?
No.
It's not. Oh, I thought that's what it was going to be. I thought it was a setup to, like, he followed Chakotay's advice. Of course he's going to fuck up with that. Okay, my hat is off. I did not see where it was going then. But yeah, I would like to just throw in, though, it's like, it does nicely fit into Dahl's arc as well. Of, like,
it does.
He knows everything. And then him having to be a person of service, not a person of, like, glory, is a huge step for him. And that, I think, sets up a lot of stuff.
Thematically, Chakotay is a good character to tell him that, because when we first meet Chakotay, he's the captain of his own ship and he steps down to be Janeway's number one, you know. So,
yeah, that's a really great point. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that's perfect.
So Chakotay is a good mentor for Dahl. However, both of them have an issue in that they keep saying Boussard collectors, which is just weird. They've never been said like that.
No, because the Boussard collectors. Now, I can see Dahl getting it wrong, because Dahl it's sort of like going to be reading a technical manual of what these are called. But Chakotay should know better.
Chakotay should know what the Boussard collectors are.
Yeah.
I just want to check, Jim, was there a plasma eel in your Pepsi Max?
There might well have been, actually. Yeah, there's definitely something going on with it.
Just check.
So apologies there. We're not going to edit the coughing out. We stopped doing that a long time
ago. God, now Elliot started coughing. Jesus Christ, is this like
I'm
contagion?
I'm coming out in sympathy.
Am I going to be the only one left on this call because you've got contagioned? Like,
Langoliers bringing the cough. If we were in, like, a horror film about a pandemic, this would be like one of them bits where it's the state, you know, it's one of the signs that they're going down. And then it'll cut to, like, 2 weeks later and the whole world.
And it'll
dead.
Just be you on the podcast.
It'll just be you left there. If anyone can hear this podcast, do not drink the Pepsi Max.
I haven't even stopped talking to you guys. Your skeleton's there on the call and I'm still going.
yeah. There's us two and Dead Bird Man.
Yeah, there you go. You are the Dead Bird Men of this call. I was going to say something else, but it's gone. Never mind. Can't be important.
Anyway, so Dow.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Sorry. So just quickly, you mentioning the Langoliers last week, and again now we've agreed that's what they're called now. I think you brought that back to life somehow, because there's a podcast called Hollywood Babylon with Kevin Smith and Ralph Garman, and they talk about, like, there's one bit which is shit that should not be, or an exquisite act. So I think it was under exquisite acting, they play a bit from a old film or whatever, and they played a bit from the Langoliers of the guy from there Perfect Strangers who's in it, and also in Beverly Hills Cop. And he's there going, it's like, oh, no, I'm going to get fired. Like, he's going, like, when he goes mad about losing his job and ripping paper and shit. They showed that scene. So I think you have revived
that film. I often do, you know. I am on the pulse of popular culture. The amount of things that I make popular again, it's, you know.
Are you Langoliers Jesus?
I might be. Well, what did I mention this week? Cities of Gold. So well, keep we'll your eyes open for Cities of Gold next
if
week.
If that's this week's exquisite acting, I'll know.
There we go. So Dal saves the day by saving Chakotay from drowning.
Well, you've missed all the part where he doesn't know his difference between port and starboard.
Of course. Sorry.
And nearly kills them all.
Is that his biggest mistake?
No. It isn't. But it could have been. If he had killed them all, that would have been his biggest mistake.
That would have been a big mistake.
That have been a pretty big one getting them all. I mean, I'm still floored that it's not Chakotay dig. Or it might still be, but not that one that I thought, at least.
No. And like Jim says, then we go into this part where they managed to get through. And that, and then they go back on top, and Chakotay falls off, and then Dal fucks up, doesn't he? He dives overboard and saves him.
Yep, that was what I thought was his biggest mistake.
His biggest mistake. We nearly got rid of Chakotay.
So it wasn't enough to slam Chakotay for giving him advice. You wanted him dead.
Well, no, I just wanted him to. He'd have had a historic, an heroic end. Because it has saved the crew.
No, you haven't thought this through. You haven't thought this through, Elliot. You would have been more fucked than ever. They would have brought back Hollow Chakotay. Then you can't.
Oh, not Hollow Chakotay.
He could be in then all the secret. He could be in Academy if you did go that route.
At least if Hollow Chakotay is wired into the system, he'll know how to say buzzard collectors correctly.
Do you know? Holy shit.
He might even call them buzzard collectors.
Yeah.
Holy shit, though. I'm just thinking, it's like, sorry, this is a very kind of random thing, but it's like, with Academy, you can bring anyone back. Just go, they're just a hologram. There's another hologram.
You could do.
Anyone could be in that show.
Sorry, yeah. Kind of maybe that's where Shatner will finally make his return.
Jesus. For someone who's always bitching about Star Trek, he is so thirsty to come back. He always bitches about new Star Trek. Anyone who's cast as Kirk, he gets a photo with them first and then talks shit about them afterwards.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's just deliciously Shatner. But, like, yeah, then he's going, it's like, well, of course, if they want to bring me back, though, like, who am I to complain?
Well, he is Star Trek, isn't he?
Shatner's gonna Shatner.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, like, let that man be every contradiction he wants to be. Like, we all know he's a bit of a dick. He must have been a dick to work with on set, but he's also a fucking legend. He can be both. People are complicated.
Yeah. So that's more or less where we finish up.
We do have a nice tie-in, though. Like, we have a tie-in when they, just before Chakotay nearly dies and Dal ruins it. But we have where they have to go sort the rudder out so they don't crash, so Janeway can get them charged up.
Yeah.
But it plays back to the first episodes of these two parties where Chakotay uses Archimedes to shift the rock.
Oh, yeah.
When Dal's trying to pull... Sorry, early in the episodes. Because Chakotay goes, the Archimedes thing with a pole.
And he got the point wrong. I'll tackle that in a second, but you go.
But you get... They get the rock out of the way, which means that they can take off.
Yeah.
But then you have when the thing's stuck, the cadets have remembered what he taught them about Archimedes, and they're straight away, we can do this, but we need the strength up there.
Yeah.
I was just going to throw in, kind of like, I get why they did it, because it's a kid's show, so you have to like make the language relatable, but he said, give me a stick and
I can move the world.
I think it was, and I can move the world. The quote is, give me a stick long enough and a fulcrum on which to place it, and I can move the world. I just think that's such a glorious bit of language. Again, I understand it's a kid's show. You want to make it so they can understand.
I think you're making it relatable for, because, and as we do say, we watch this as adults, and it's a really enjoyable show, and fully recommend it to anybody to watch this show, because it is accessible to everyone. But it is aimed at a very young audience as well, so you have to dumb down some of these things to make it accessible.
I agree, but to play devil's advocate, that wasn't a particularly kind of pivotal fast scene.
Yeah.
You could have taken time to go, and a fulcrum, which move, and they go, what the hell's a fulcrum? You could have taught kids what a fulcrum is. I like Star Trek for doing that.
But I just thought it was a nice touch that he did that at the start of the episode.
Yeah.
And that's what they had to do at the end of the episode, and they'd learnt it from him. This is what we have to do.
Yeah.
We can go sort this out.
Yeah, nice callback to that, yeah.
Absolutely. And then, yeah, we're left. They've got the ship flying, but they've got a long journey. And it's powered by a star, but they haven't got one. And then it finishes on this brilliant triumphant note of, well, we've remade the ship. Let's go make a star.
Why wouldn't you? And the thing is, at this point, they've sort of made Jacoby believe in stuff, and they've made it work, and they've done it, and they've recharged the ship, and they've got the warp engines working and everything.
Yeah.
And he's bought, and he immediately buys into, let's go get a little star so we have a proto car as well.
Absolutely.
This makes sense. But then again, he did also come from Voyager with Janeway, and they were all always going off and doing stupid shit.
And if I can throw in another kind of like a moment we didn't cover, I love the fact that Murph has pretty much become the Swiss Army knife. He's become almost the embodiment of the sonic screwdriver in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
If there's something you don't know how you're going to get out of a situation, throw Murph into it, and we will find out he can do something that we've never found before. And it fits the character nicely. It doesn't ever feel like a cheat, which the sonic sometimes actually does.
That goes back to the first episode, doesn't it, when they're getting in the car to go find Dal. And Jacoby goes, why is Blobby guy here? And Gwen just goes, it's security. Then when they're running into trouble and seatbelts break and all that, Murph just goes like this, catches them all, puts them down, fixes his seatbelt, and Jacoby's there. Yeah, get it now, security.
And everyone else, like they surprise you with what they can do, but they're always within sort of defined parameters of what their character can do. Like, you know, the Medusa thing with Zero is always really fun to play. And like, they can open the mask and like when they're in the encounter suit, whatever you would call that, and bedazzle someone. But it's always playing on the kind of like skills we know they've got. Murph, you can have so much fun with just
going,
it turns out, I mean, Murph can swim in the water with the dolphins and becomes a kind of different creature when he's in the water. It's just so much fun to always play about with that. And
when Jacoby was doing his cloud fishing and he's getting one or two, and then Murph actually comes up from clouds and he's got a huge net full of fish.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder if he's changed shape and been flying about to catch all them.
Good point. Yeah, that would be a fun thing.
And
I still preferred Murph when he was just the blob as opposed to the arms and legs. I thought that was funnier, and he could have still done where he could change shape and that and fly.
The ultimate example of having the character who can do things, if we go back to the original series, obviously it's all become part of the lore now, but Spock used to come out with some stuff that was always handy, like, oh, well, I can actually do this mind meld.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've never told you I can do this nerve pinch. You know what? Vulcans have got an inner eyelid, so I can't go blind. And, it was always very convenient.
Yeah. I can I can mind meld and influence them through a wall.
Yeah,
they had a comedy show on Sky, which they did, because at one stage Sky bought all the rights to all the Star Treks to
go
new, and they had this show which was a comedy show about Star Trek. And it's like, it's just so, what, like, oh my god, it they like Star Trek so much they're gonna make their own show around it, like their own little comedy special. And there was one bit, it was like, actually Vulcans have two lunches, like, you know, so and just Spock making up bullshit just as it goes along, to like, oh, actually Vulcans always go up first when there's a warp core breeze. Sorry, it's never come up before quite, and it's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. Anyway.
So Earth is the modern Spock, is what you're saying, and I agree.
Yeah, there you go.
I agree.
So we'll wrap up there then. We'll be back next week to talk about the next two episodes.
Earth is Star Trek Jesus.
I can't remember what it's called, the Tribble one. And
We've got a Tribble coming.
We've got a Tribble one, and we've got a multiverse.
I'm just wondering, Jim, is there anything which we're planning for in 2 weeks' time that you'd like to maybe foreshadow, maybe predict something?
Ooh.
What, predicting something, what, for 2 weeks' time?
You mean we may have an anniversary coming up?
And maybe you'd like to predict a riot, if you will.
Yeah, well, yeah. A week on Friday, it is the actual date of the Bell Riots, which I think in the UK we did it a couple of weeks early, but we seem to have sorted it out now.
That was our tribute to Star Trek in the most god-awful fucking
So, yeah, we've
ever.
Got the Bell Riots coming up, so if you're in Los Angeles, just be careful.
Yeah.
So it will also coincide with our 250th episode. So we'll watch this space.
We might have a week break from Prodigy because we've got the time, and do something different.
So
we thought, as opposed to doing it the day before, it would be kind of sweet to do it for our 250th, as Elliot suggested. I thought it was great. Like, yeah, it nicely ties in.
It does nicely tie in with this. It's almost like when we started this show and 4 or 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
11 years ago, I believe it was.
5 years and a bit ago. It's almost like we planned out every break we could possibly have in advance.
We said we want to do exactly 250 for when we get to the Bell Riots. That's what we said.
And I said, shall we get it so that it's on the week of the Bell Riots? No, we will do it since the week after. Thank you. You rightly said to me, you two. You said no.
Well, because it's a Friday, you know.
No, but it's a Friday, so it does work.
Friday's a good night for a riot, a bad night for a podcast.
But it's a whole, like, it's within the week, so it counts.
It's within the week, yeah, and the Bell Riots went on for quite a while, so, you know, I just really
wanted to bring it up so people didn't go in next week and go, oh, they haven't thought this through. Yes, we have. We thought.
And then, of course, our 3,000th episode is on First Contact Day when the Vulcans actually land. Yeah. So tune in for that one in 40 years. 39. So, yes. Anyway, we'll wrap up there. So
it sounds like you're counting down 30 years. Oh, sorry, 29.
Yeah. Well, you can't get it right.
39.
More episodes next week. Bell Riots the week after. And we're at RetrekPod on X. We're RetrekPod@gmail.com. We're on all the socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
And I keep trying to get a video out, but as people know, I've got a house move coming up, so things aren't getting done like normal. Well, and my models, Alfie Model Studios, packed away already.
But there's hours and hours of previous content. You can
probably days worth.
Days worth. Go back, check it out. And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Well, as you know, last week we sort of did some Star Trek material with Patty Yatazaki sadly passing away. So I featured some Star Trek interviews, which was kind of a sort of, if you like, a kind of crossover with this. This week, I've recorded yesterday. It's up there now, so you can enjoy it right now. I did an interview which crossed over with with my Due South podcast. So basically, Tom Lissus, who played Detective Tom Dewey, he was my guest, and we spoke for an hour 20 last night. He not only did do Due South, but he was also in Degrassi over in Canada, which is a huge show over there, and lots of other things. He got to work with Mr. T, which is a story in of itself.
That's awesome.
Fucking legend. It was amazing. Basically, I'm away LARPing as of tomorrow, so I thought it was a nice way of getting an episode out, getting Due South covered. And yeah, please go and check that out at youtube.com/Dr. Squee, D-O-C-T-O-R, Squee, or on Facebook at the Dr. Squee Show. Thank you very much.
Excellent. So in the meantime, you need to remember to go fast.
Go fast.
And thanks for trekking with us this time. We'll see you next time on the retrek.
Thank you. Goodbye.
LLAP and drag off!
Fascinating.